Okay, so my theme for the evening is Shraddha. So we're still on the overall theme of positive emotion, but we're moving soon into a theme of receptivity, spiritual receptivity. And Shraddha is very much on the cusp between the two. So we can relate to it in both ways, I think. It's not going to be a very structured talk. Shraddha doesn't really fit very comfortably with rational, structured, logical, systematic talks. So it's going to be a bit more, I hope it's going to be a bit more of a conversation. I've got a few poems to read, a few bits of Dharma. I'd like to invite you all to ask questions at any time. I think of it as more informed, more of a conversation. And maybe we can open that up at the end into a conversation. Okay, so a little bit about Shraddha then. So last week, wasn't it, we were doing the Brahma Viharas, and I was talking about how all the other three Brahma Viharas, Karana, Mudita, Upeksha, are sort of forms that metta takes in response to encountering different circumstances, people in different conditions. Something delightful and celebratory will find a natural response of mudita from a base of metta. Something difficult, painful, or something unfortunate, something unskillful will find a natural response of karana. And when there's a sense of the way that those two are kind of very interwoven in human nature and in human life, then there's this response of upekkha, or equanimity, or equipoise. So that's a traditional set of four positive emotions. But I think we can very much regard Shraddha, or confidence, trust, or faith, as like a fifth pranavihara. And because it's a sort of natural response of a base of metta on encountering something that inspires us. Something, a sense of our ideals, a sense of the three jewels, a sense of our inspiration. Something that symbolizes that, something that expresses that, something that reminds us of that. So the natural response there would be Shraddha. And so Shraddha has got this, it's got a quality of confidence and trust in it. Confidence in our practice, confidence in the Sangha, confidence in the path we're treading, confidence in where we're going, trust in the way, trust in the goal. It's also got a quality of openness and receptivity to it. So the last retreat I was on was Basantra, who some of you may know. He's been involved with the Bristol Sangha for many decades, actually. And the broad theme certainly included receptivity. And he was emphasizing in that context that receptivity really needs to include an openness to Adhisthana. So Adhisthana is the name of this central Chiratna retreat center, residential community. And it's named after this quality of, well, receptivity to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Sometimes it's translated as grace. The sort of influence, the sense of the positive influence from the Buddhas, from the Bodhisattvas, from enlightened awareness. A sort of calling back. You know, we're reaching out, and sometimes there's that sense of connection, of something reaching in. There's a sort of story and a sort of metaphor in Chinese Buddhism that you can think of a practitioner, perhaps particularly a new practitioner of the Dharma, as like a little chick who's kind of just trying to break out from his shell. But at the same time, the mother hen is trying to break in, you know, break the shell, so that freedom, when you're out of the shell, it's freedom. So we're kind of doing what we can to break free, to use that language, but we can have confidence, trust that there's a response. Yeah, there's a response from the three jewels, from what we're kind of making a connection with. And so drawing out that quality of receptivity in Shraddha, it's a receptivity to the three jewels. Well, what are the three jewels? You can think of the Buddha as enlightened awareness, so it's a receptivity to enlightened awareness, or sometimes in Japanese Buddhism, I think it's called big mind. So it's not different from human awareness. Just as Buddhahood is not different from humanity. One of the famous Japanese texts says, outside of living beings, no Buddhas. It's not a inhuman abstraction, it's a human potential. So it's a receptivity to something that potentially we've got immediate and imminent sort of connection with. So there's this perspective in Buddhism that it's actually right here, it's right now, it's very immediate, it's very, the potential's right there. Unfortunately, we don't notice that, or we don't realise that, because our experience is kind of covered over, obscured, veiled. So there's this basic metaphor you've come across quite a bit in Buddhism of, I like the way it's put in the in a couple of the gradual sayings, a couple of the sutras and gradual sayings. It says, mind, bhikkhus, is luminous, but it's obscured by the obstructing defilements. And then it goes on to say, mind, bhikkhus, is luminous, and it's unobscured by the obstructing defilements. So in samsara, mind is nonetheless luminous. Enlightened awareness is the essential nature of one's own mind, but it's obscured. And then when you clear the obstructions, that luminosity of mind is unobstructed. So this receptivity of Shatara is a receptivity to something which on the one hand can be very close, very imminent, but it's not familiar, you know, because it's we have a sort of sense of familiar old me. So we have a sense of I suppose identity, of habit, of familiar patterns. And that all seems normal. Whereas receptivity is receptivity to something that's coming from beyond that. So it may well be something that feels strange. And there are parallels to all of this with deepening into absorption in meditation as well. You may have found that when you sort of first enter into a state of absorption, the quality of sort of physical energy rush, the quality of a sort of open, expanded depth of pleasure in the mind are very unfamiliar, and they can almost feel, you can almost feel a certain wariness or even aversion to it just because it's unfamiliar. So the openness is an openness to what's beyond our habit patterns, beyond our familiar territory. It's also an openness to what's not within the scope of what we're identifying with. So we have a sense of identity which encompasses, I don't know, a certain sort of set of habit patterns, a certain familiarity of day-to-day experience. And we tend to identify with this. So this is what seems like self, it's what seems like me. But receptivity is receptivity to something that's from beyond that. So it can seem other. It doesn't necessarily seem like me. So when we talk about the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, we do talk about them as other, you know, as other figures. And that is very often how they're experienced. You might have an experience of Tara or an experience of Ratnasambhava in a Buddhist practice, and it'll feel like it's not an experience of me, it's an experience of another being. And that's basically why it's an openness or receptivity to something that's actually completely outside of the bit that we were identifying with. And thirdly, and lastly, it can seem distant. It can seem distant because it's from beyond the sort of tight centre of what we're kind of holding on to, what we're clinging to. And so we're worried about distant, but it can have negative connotations. But for those of you who've done the second year of the Mitra study course, you'll probably remember the perfect vision in the series on vision and transformation, and Bantu is describing this vision of the mountaintop, which can be something that happens very early on in your practice. It might even be something that actually brings you into Dharma practice in the first place. And it's a sort of vision of enlightenment. But as a consequence of that, there's this sort of confidence, trust that the mountaintop's over there, and you can kind of orientate yourself by it and towards it. So Bhante's in this context talking about that as vision, as wisdom, if you like. But I think it also has this quality of Shraddha to it. You know, you've got confidence in the possibility of enlightenment because you've kind of seen it, but you've seen it over there, you've seen it in the distance. And so that can seem distant, but nonetheless inspiring, nonetheless opening. So receptivity, receptivity is something that's kind of larger, and larger can involve a sense of more distant. Yeah. So going on to another quality of this sort of openness, receptivity, Shraddha, in the context of my own reflection anyway, I think it's very much got a quality of undefendedness. Undefendedness. And that's got a sort of heroic quality to it. It's something that Chogdor Rinpoche really drew out when he founded the Shambhala Buddhist order, that some of you might have come across. But it's Shambhala is a path of the warrior. And he was very much talking of a Dharma practice in terms of being a warrior. And so on one level that can seem quite contradictory, because warriors are in the business of warfare, and warfare is about either attack or defence, and all of that's unskillful. So it's not literally a warrior in that sense, but it is. There are sort of qualities to a warrior which include a quality of real confidence that you can see expressed in a confidence to be open, a confidence to be undefended, to let go of the guard, to not be looking for an escape route all the time, but to just kind of really, really occupy your place, be present, be open, be undefended. That kind of a very sort of, even a heroic quality to it. So I want to drop in at this point something from one of my favourite Mahayana sutras, which is the Ratnaguna Sanchaya Gata. And I can't remember quite what that means. Gata of verses, Ratna is jewel, and I think it's jewel, a mine of jewel, I think. And the opening of the whole text goes like this. Call forth as much as you can of love, of respect, and of faith. Remove the obstructing defilements and clear away all of your taints. Listen to the perfect wisdom of the gentle Buddhas, taught for the weal of the world, for heroic spirits intended. So I'll just drop that one in again. Call forth as much as you can of love, of respect, and of faith. Remove the obstructing defilements and clear away all your taints. Listen to the perfect wisdom of the gentle Buddhas, taught for the weal of the world, for heroic spirits intended. So, that's really joining up the sort of heroic ideal, the heroic spirit, with the receptivity of faith, of Shraddha, and with metta, with love, of respect, and of faith. Okay. So, the next sort of metaphor, if you like, or description I wanted to drop in is from Tibet. It's from a teacher called Lung Chenpa in the Tibetan tradition. I'll just start with the quote. So Lung Chenpa says, Within the expanse of spontaneous presence lies the ground for all that arises. Since beginningless time, it's never been anything. Yet it arises as anything at all. So I'll just drop that in again. Within the expanse of spontaneous presence lies the ground for all that arises. Since beginningless time, it's never been anything. Yet it arises as anything at all. So that's not a teaching that you can kind of give an explanation of. So I don't want to just say what it means this. I wanted to say that it felt connected to me, to the quality of receptivity. So to be receptive is to be very much present. To be present in the sense of now, and present, you're in the moment. Also present in the sense of here, you're present, you're not absent, you're actually really centrally occupying your experience, and you're kind of being with your experience in a very sensitive, present sort of way. And that's just happening in a way you can sort of, well, like with all meditation practice, it's got a sort of initial phase of establishing. So you establish the attention and then you relax into it. It's got this relaxing into stage, or sort of deepening into by relaxing into. So just in the same way, yeah, I think you can relate to all meditation practice in terms of you're kind of establishing a quality of presence. Here you are, here, now, doing this meditation. And as you relax into that, it becomes less deliberate. It's just happening. You just are present. You're not doing presence. You're not contriving presence. You're not fabricating presence. It's just something in the state of mind that you're in the moment, you're present. And so spontaneous presence is presence that has that kind of uncontrived, unfabricated, natural quality to it. It's just happening. Here it is, present, a presence of awareness. So for me, that's another way of describing the quality of spiritual receptivity, which is principally associated with just sitting as a meditation practice. So just sitting for me is sitting in a spontaneous presence that's just happening. It's not a doing practice. So there we are with spontaneous presence, and Long Shenpa saying, within the expanse of spontaneous presence lies the ground for all that arises. So I want to say a few things about ground. It's a sort of metaphor. I find it can be a very helpful metaphor of enabling me to sort of not be so caught up in the content, in the particular content of specific experiences, but to kind of open up more into the sort of space around it, more into the quality of presence around it, but also potentially more into the sort of ground, the sort of ground from which the experience is arising. So this, I want to sort of associate this with Shraddha in the sense that I'm associating it with receptivity. So I'll say a bit about that. And I think I covered this perhaps last week in the meditation on the meditation exercise. So as a basic practice of metta, certainly a basic practice of self-metta, you can just relate to that as a practice of being present with whatever's particularly calling your attention. So anything in your experience which particularly needs attention, you're just completely giving attention to that. Yeah, so you're just being present with that. And then that's enables you to kind of not be so caught up. So being present is more like being alongside, sitting with, rather than actually being lost in, being caught up in. And so the presence itself, you know, perhaps I'm being present with something in me that's actually quite upset. But the quality of presence in itself isn't upset. Yeah. Awareness in itself Doesn't hope for anything, doesn't fear anything, doesn't desire anything, is not averse to anything. It's quite possible to be present with anything. And when we're sitting in that way with presence, then those qualities become more apparent, the qualities of presence. So initially we might just be aware of the quality of a particular experience, saying there's a particularly difficult experience that's demanding our attention. That's all we're aware of to start with. But as we're with that, as we're present with that, we kind of pick up on the qualities of awareness, the qualities of presence, which in themselves are not averse, they're not desirous, they don't hope for or feel anything. So we've already made a move into presence, from preoccupation into presence. And the presence is just happening. As we relax into it, it's just happening. It's not something we're contriving, not something we're confecting, not something we're fabricating, it's not something we're doing. So that's why we're particularly associating receptivity with just sitting. It's not a doing practice. It's not something you're doing when you're just sitting. So there's just presence. There it is, spontaneously present. And then Long Chain was saying, well, within this spontaneous presence is a ground for all that arises. So to take an example, all the sounds that arise, you know, the car comes up the road, you hear the sound, goes away, fades away. It's arising from silence, it's returning to silence. Yeah. There's a sort of ground of silence within which all the sounds that you hear are unfolding. Physically, you might have a sense of balance, and balance has got a quality of very fine movement to it. But that movement's all happening within a space of stillness. So the awareness itself, the quality of presence itself is actually quite still, but there's a subtle movement within it. And my suggestion is it's that this ground of silence, this ground of stillness, this ground of awareness within which experience arises is a ground of sensitivity and a ground of presence. Yeah. And abiding in that ground, I would suggest, is shadha. So that's the receptivity. And it's certainly shadha to the extent that it incorporates and includes a receptivity to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, to the Three Jewels, to Adhisthana. And I think it's going to do that to the extent that that's actually part of our orientation. Yeah, so the more that we actually go for refuge, the more we're actually going to be kind of imbued with that sort of orientation. And the more that orientation's there, then the more when we just sit, that's going to be apparent. Yeah, so that openness to the ideal of enlightenment, to the path, the sort of golden thread that runs through experience, to the quality of the Sangha of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, is just going to kind of be present with us. Yeah. So I wanted to drop in a poem by Rumi now. So Rumi's a Sufi poet. He wasn't a Buddhist, but he did have a real feel for the spiritual life. He's very popular with Padmavajra, one of the lead meditation, retreat leaders in our movement. Anyway, this is a poem by Rumi called A Great Wagon. And he says, out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. People are going back and forth across the dorsal where the two worlds touch. The door is round and open. Don't go back to sleep. So I'll drop that one in again. I think poems are always worth reading twice. So this is Rumi's poem, Great Wagon. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. People are going back and forth across the dorsal where the two worlds touch. The door is round and open. Don't go back to sleep. So that repeated phrase, don't go back to sleep. I think it really speaks to me that we all have a degree of awakening. You know, perhaps mostly we use the word awakening to mean full and perfect enlightenment, but we have a degree of awakening to the extent we have a connection with enlightened awareness, and to the extent that we're kind of motivated to practice the Dharma, we've woken up a bit. And, as another poet, William Stafford, said, it's important that awake people should be awake. So don't underestimate the influence that has, not just on your own experience and your own life, but also on your communication with others and on our collective practice. So our collective practice as the sangha of the people that we live and breathe and practice with depends. It depends on that quality of communication and upon us staying true to the awakening that we have. And Rumi's talking about this field, meeting you at this field beyond wrongdoing and rightdoing. So this is like another sort of image for me of the ground of awareness, the ground for all that arises. So I want to say, a few associations for me with ground. So positively, in terms of what arises, I can think of that as a dancing ground, as a summoning ground, or as a mystic ground. Yeah. It's the ground of ritual, the ground of summoning, they're bringing forth. But it's also the ground in which all things cease. Yeah. So conditionality has these two sides to it. And it has the quality of arising, this being that becomes from the arising of this that arises. But it also has the quality of cessation, this not being that does not become from the ceasing of this that ceases. So the ground is also a cremation ground, a charnel ground, a burning ground. It's the ground of cessation. And cessation is the falling away of bondage, which is liberation. It's the blowing out of the flames of greed, hatred, and delusion, which is nirvana. So cessation, maybe your initial association with the word is negative, but actually just think liberation, think freedom, think open dimension of being. There's a very traditional list of three characteristics of experience, which the Mahayana extended a bit into four. I always thought this was actually in the Pali Canon, but apparently it's not. This is the four seals of Maha Mudra, again from the Tibet tradition, which are: all conditioned things are suffering, all conditioned things are impermanent, all conditioned things are insubstantial. Nirvana is peace. All conditioned things are suffering. All conditioned things are impermanent. All conditioned things are insubstantial. Nirvana is peace. So it's a falling away and cessation of dukkha, of what is unsatisfactory because it's not to be dependent on because it's impermanent, and which is not able to give you enduring solace because it's insubstantial. So the falling away and cessation of all of that is peace. Yeah. So cessation again is peace. Um, And again, this sort of connects for me with the quality of receptivity and the quality of faith and the quality of Shraddha. It's a receptivity to Nirvana. Yeah, so Nirvana is another way of saying the Buddha jewel. And it's an openness. It's an openness to expanses beyond our sense of familiar, which can be unsettling, but it's also enticing. So I don't know if you've experienced that sense of fascination and enticingness of the new, of the unfamiliar, of the strange, of the unsettling. But I think it's something that another poet, Baudelaire, a French poet, really expressed, really captured the spirit of in a poem of his called The Voyage. Le Voyage. So I'll just read you a little bit from the end of that. Stay if you can, stir if you must. One hope remains, to venture forth with onward as our cry. Death, old admiral, up anchor now. This country wearies us. Put out to sea. What if the waves and winds are black as ink? Our hearts are filled with light. You know our hearts. Any abyss will do, deep into the unknown, to find the new. It's really expressing that sort of urge, that heart wish to go beyond the familiar. So this openness and receptivity, it can be quite the opposite of a possibility that seems something to be wary of, that from a defended position. It can be something that seems incredibly fascinating, attractive, and desirable. And so I wanted to include a couple of poems of Bhante's, of Sangharakshita's, where I think he's really expressing this quality, this practice, well, both the practice and the quality of receptivity, of staying with the unknown, of opening to what might come from outside one's sense of familiar self. So this is a poem Bhante's called Advent. I listened all day for the knock of the stranger, and I often looked out from the door. The table was scrubbed, the brass shining, and well swept the floor. The shadows grew longer and longer. In the grate, the fire flickered and died. It's too late, he'll never come now, I said inside. I sat there, musing and musing, the spinning wheel still at my side. The moonlight came in through the window, white, like a bride. As the clock struck 12, I heard nothing, but felt he had come and stayed waiting outside. And I listened, and I was afraid. So, it's very metaphorical, isn't it? But it, to me, captures the quality of receptivity in practice. So there's a quality of, sort of, quite an active quality of preparing the ground. But from that sort of preparing the ground, from that scrubbing, shining the brass, sweeping the floor, it's all done with a spirit of welcome. And openness and receptivity. You're kind of preparing the space in order to welcome the guest. So I'll just read that one sometime. I listened all day for the knock of the stranger, and I often looked out from the door. The table was scrubbed, the brass shining, and well swept the floor. The shadows grew longer and longer. In the grate, the fire flickered and died. It's too late, he'll never come now, I said inside. I sat there, musing and musing, the spinning wheel still at my side. The moonlight came in through the window, white like a bride. As the clock struck 12, I heard nothing, but felt he had come and stayed waiting outside. And I listened, and I was afraid. So there's that quality of a simple practice imbued with receptivity, the quality of openness and receptivity. And there is that sense that when something new does emerge, it's quite unsettling. In a way, that's almost bound to be a quality of the new, the unfamiliar. It can be quite unsettling. But the thread there of Shraddha, the thread of confidence, trust, is the real kind of anchor and, guide and centre of the whole practice. So there's one more poem of Bhante's I wanted to finish with, which is called The Lotus of Compassion. And in this one, I think he's really drawing out the way in which the practice of spiritual receptivity involves both the going forth and leaving behind, and the going for refuge and moving towards. And how actually the two are just two sides of the same coin. In any sort of movement, there's a movement away and there's a movement towards. So this is Sangharakshita's The Lotus of Compassion. The lotus blooms tonight. Oh, leave the crowded shore where men buy and sell. Shake off the soft detaining fingers of your friends. And in a little boat at midnight, when the moon is full and glitters at you from the water, row swiftly to the quiet heart of the lake where the lotus blooms, the great golden lotus of the Lord's compassion. And you will feel the sweetness ineffable of its heart fragrance, coming on a breeze which ripples the face of the silent waters to meet you beneath the stars. So I'll just read that once more. The lotus blooms tonight. Oh, leave the crowded shore where men buy and sell. Shake off the soft detaining fingers of your friends, and in a little boat at midnight, when the moon is full and glitters at you from the water, row swiftly to the quiet heart of the lake where the lotus blooms, the great golden lotus of the Lord's compassion. And you will feel the sweetness ineffable of its heart fragrance, coming on a breeze which ripples the face of the silent waters to meet you beneath the stars. So I think that's very much an expression of an attitude of Shraddha. And it's got this quality of a preparedness to go forth, to leave the marketplace, to just set off on your own. So it's, in that sort of way, it's really evoking the private ordination ceremony, where you're saying you're just prepared to practice the Dharma, to go for refuge to the three jewels, even if nobody else wants to do it on your own, yourself in your little boat, and head out into the lake. And yeah, it's got this quality of something active, of going for refuge. You're untying your little boat, you're getting in and you're rowing out. Something you're doing, you've got a direction, and there you go. And you're heading to the center of the lake. And this description of the great golden lotus of the Lord's compassion, I think it's really sort of drawing out the sort of warm emotional tone of this quality of enlightened awareness. So I think sometimes we can wind up emphasizing or seeing the gold in terms of wisdom, and it can seem a bit cold, a bit abstract. And we even talk about space and talk about the ground, it sounds quite cold and abstract. But here Bant is drawing out the sort of the heart of it, the emotional quality of it, which is the compassion quality. So you're entering this space which has this whole tone, this whole experiential felt quality of compassion in it. And it's completely ineffable. You can't pin it down as anything. Even to call it compassion doesn't do it justice, doesn't capture the heart of it, the spirit of it. All of the words that we use are just kind of pointers. They're just suggestions, just hints. And hopefully they're going to be useful enough suggestions, useful enough pointers, and useful enough hints that we can kind of follow the direction of that pointer and find in our own experience something of that quality. Something of that quality of Adishtana, something of that quality of the sort of clear blue sky and the mountain top in the distance. Something of that quality of, of the three jewels of enlightened awareness. And all of that, talking around Shraddha as something that we can connect with, something we can deepen into, in a sense, something we can cultivate and develop. So I'm sort of, in a way, taking a different perspective here. So I've been talking much more in terms of spiritual receptivity and just sitting as an aspect of practice which is not about doing. There's nothing to do, there's nowhere to go. And seemingly contradictory, but in fact, sitting happily alongside that, there is the possibility of bhavana, of cultivation and development. And Shraddha is something like metta, which can be cultivated, which can be developed, which can be deepened into and strengthened. And the practice of puja is probably our principal practice of cultivating and developing Shraddha. And it has its form, it has its structure, which can become very familiar. And looking around, perhaps it's not that familiar to some of you, and thoroughly familiar to others of you. And familiarity is a mixed blessing. It can have the unfortunate consequence that you kind of just go through the motions, rites and rituals, and end it. But one of the fetters is described as rites and rituals as ends in themselves. So rites and rituals, such as puja, can become habitual. That's kind of missing the point. But even the repetition, the familiarity, can be a strength. It can be a sort of way of gradually deepening into. One of the Buddha's aphorisms was, non-repetition is the canker of the sacred verses. I remember when Satchalili used that quote, someone misheard her and they thought she'd said, repetition is the anchor of the sacred verses. Which is also true. And so that's sort of what we're doing in the puja. We're reciting in call and response, we're repeating sacred verses. And that repetition can involve a deepening into, an anchoring, a keeping alive. And those verses, they're all kind of expressing Shraddha, the main puja we do, which we're not doing tonight, is drawn from the Bhattacharya Avatara, which is Shantideva's sort of expression of a very deep and intense experience of Shraddha, basically, of Shraddha. And the one we're doing tonight is the Bodhicitta puja, which is equally much, a practice and a cultivation and development of Shraddha.